All right, we're blue. We're blue. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, June 8th, 2021. That's Ian in a blue Drake's cake shirt.
Yes.
This is Pat in a Mr. Met officially licensed Mets t-shirt. How are we doing today out there? How are you doing? This is a CU podcast. We got lots of stuff to cover. We got a play date update. Absolutely. Update. A good one. Well, we're going to be talking about a Taito mini arcade cabinet. Lots of fun little mini news and washed up former arcade pros trying to sue YouTubers and things of that nature. Ian, how was your weekend?
My weekend was stellar. Thank you.
Stellar. Is stellar right below excellent? About very good?
No,
about very good.
It was good. It was good.
You're already falling off a little, Ian. Come a little closer to Daddy Pat.
I don't want to.
Okay. Sorry.
I don't want to. No, it was good. It was a good weekend. There was some sadness in the D&D group. We lost two of our five party members.
Press F to pay respects.
Yep. It was a sad moment. Vani's character, Flan, went down.
Flan. What a great name.
Went down trying to rescue someone else in our group who had already gone down. A large bone-clawed bear thing of some sort had killed them. 15-foot claws on the fucker.
15-foot claws? And how tall is the actual creature?
I don't know. But that's where we got into issues.
It'd be like 200 feet
tall.
That's
where we got into issues. Killed. It incapacitated our one character. And then Vani went running after to save it. And it has a reaction attack that when you're within 15 feet of it, it can attack you with the claws and then snare you with them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was bad.
Wow.
We all had
that was good. That was a stellar part of the weekend, though.
Well, no.
Seeing Vani's character get destroyed.
No, that was not good. But it was fun. It's all part of the game. I also did a wild and wacky thing.
Wild and crazy kids? Wild and crazy kids.
Bought a thing that I normally would not purchase. But I...
Oh, I got so many jokes I could have done there, Ian, but I love you too much.
I mean, I don't care. You can joke all you want. I had the opportunity to get an Oculus Quest 2 for basically nothing. I'm not going to get into why. But,
what? Fall off the back of a truck?
No. No. So I decided to pick it up. And I have to tell you, people who have listened to us on the podcast know, you know.
No one listens to us.
We've never been particularly like crazy enthusiastic about VR. For me, my main experience with virtual reality has been the PSVR, the PlayStation 4 virtual reality headset. And I have to admit that, you know, my first time using it, it was very cool. But the setup is a pain in the ass. And our friend Tom lent me his PlayStation VR. And honestly, with virtual reality, I kind of only want to do it for like 30 minutes at a time. It's not something I want to spend like a whole lot of time in. And the whole setup and breakdown of it, and all the cords really meant that I just never really used that PlayStation VR headset. But I got the Quest, and I got to say that like having no wires is a huge deal.
No wires.
No wires is like amazing. I literally just picked the damn thing up, put it on my head, grab my controllers.
Place
and,
to be.
Woo! I'm here.
It's joystick that I want to put. I forget the commercial. America.
So I did what any person would do the first night that they got this VR headset. I got extremely, extremely high.
Oh, I thought you'd go right to porn. That's what a lot of people probably do when they get a VR headset.
No. I got extremely, extremely high.
You're aroused.
Ate a bunch of edibles and downloaded two games right off the bat. The new Puzzle Bobble, you know, the cute little dinosaurs, bust a move, they call it here in the States. And now this one's called Puzzle Bobble. There's a virtual reality one.
Okay, and you buy that at a store digitally?
Buy it on a digital store. And holy shit, when I hold my hands in front of my eyes, they turn into dinosaur paws.
Wow.
It's great. It was amazing. I spent like 5 minutes just being like, look at my cool
hands.
Okay,
so you have the hand contraptions with this.
Yeah, hand controllers. And they're super comfortable. And I think that's the big thing is also previously when I had used VR, the PS4 VR, I didn't do any hand tracking or anything. I just played with like the controller. So obviously you move your head around and you can see and that's cool. But that whole extra layer, as silly as everyone must look when using VR, it really added a lot. It was very neat.
So,
Okay. Like the dinosaur throws you the bubble, and you put the bubble in the gun, and then you have to pull it back and fire it.
So it sounds like you had a fun time. Would you have spent the full amount, though, to have this experience looking back?
I don't know. That's what I'm kind of getting
at. You'd be a little wishy on how you got this or what. I mean, I'm curious. You didn't tell me
first. No, because I just don't want... Because I'm not interested in talking about stock stuff, and I made a little bit of money off of AMC.
Oh. We like the stock, AMC.
It was not life-changing money, so it wasn't like it could go towards like a big thing, but it was enough that I could be fucking a little flippant with it.
Gambled on the stock market a little bit.
December.
Even though he famously says to me he doesn't like to gamble. Yes. He's been gambling on stocks and Dogecoin.
All of the stuff that I have said about this came from a purchase I made in December. It was one night, and I've been watching
you
it like since.
I'll get you to play poker again, Ian. I'll rope you into our Zoom games. This Thursday we're playing. We can team up, me and you. You're not supposed to do that. It's bad etiquette. We can team up.
It is bad etiquette.
But we can do it.
But I played the new snowboarding game from our friends over at Chu Hai Labs.
Which we'll get to later.
We will. Well, we'll get to their new game. But their snowboarding game...
Don't give away a super future topic, Ian. I just lost $2,000 on shipping.
This doesn't have anything to do with the future topic. And it was wild. I am very bad at the tricks. I was able to grind once, but really my enjoyment of carved snowboarding comes down to putting on some sweet tunes, getting real high, and just kind of...
Oh, VR snowboarding.
Yeah, enjoying my
It's like you're back in Seaside Heights playing the snowboarding game in 98.
Well, I love the snow.
They had a snowboarding game? No, it was a remember those skateboarding arcade games that were awesome?
Uh-huh, Top Skater.
Those were fun.
But I love the snow, and there's a little cabin you start out in, and a dog that you can pet.
Oh, snow dog.
Yeah. It was really fun. So I like VR more than I thought I did.
This is why I don't like VR.
Adding convenience and hand tracking really helped.
This is why I don't like VR. It's more about the people that enjoy it. I'm in a bad mood this morning because I lost money with the shipping thing. But the over-enthusiasm, I'm not saying you've been overly enthusiastic. The over-enthusiasm that people try to convince me to try VR is unlike anything I've ever experienced before with any form of technology. If someone's into VR, they are really into VR, and they got to tell you all about it. And people that are friends I dearly love, they get a little too enthusiastic about it, explaining to me all the cool stuff they do, and it kind of turns me off a little bit. It's like they tried a little bit too hard to get me into it, and it sort of gets me about it. And of course, there's the disorientation when you use it too long, plus you look like a maniac when you actually have the gear on if you're in front of people, you know. I'm not even trying to think about like porn shame where you got to like take off and hose off all your equipment when you're done using your VR stuff. That's like an extra level of shame on top of that, you know, especially if you're using the hand controllers.
Of course, I fished in VR already too.
Okay, so that sounds relaxing and fun.
It was very
relaxing. Was it like photorealistic or was it like...
So there is a photorealistic one. There's one that's very like realistic that looks great.
On top of the bay.
That I will get at some point. Fishing, but actually VR, one of the... one of the best free games that they always recommend you get with an Oculus Quest 2 is there's a fishing game called Bait that's a little cartoony.
I like how you ignore my over-the-top complaint about people that like Oculus or VR. That's the proper response to my rant.
I know lots of people who are into VR that can be very evangelical about it.
I wasn't going to use those strong terms, but there is a slight cultish sort of feel to how they speak about this stuff.
I can tell you this. I'm not going to be one of those. It's not something that's easy to talk about because not a lot of people do it, and you can't really describe it if people haven't tried it. But once you have an experience in VR that's a bit more ideal, it's easy to see why people get excited about it.
I brought up the party a week and a half ago almost, where the older lady was trying to hook me up the daughter. There was a VR moment at that party near the end of the night. The guy running the party, he's a big, strong VR person. He loves it, even though he's not a gamer at all. He likes VR. And he had one of the women try this VR thing where, like, oh, you want to walk the plank? And there's like a pirate ship thing. And you see, I'm seeing the woman leaving, like, oh my God, and then the person's like, don't worry, it's not real. And I'm like, look at this. I'm like, they're acting like 5-year-olds. But I understand the appeal of something like this, where it's like, it gets to a point when you're so far removed from technology where it comes fresh again, I think. Like, if you're not constantly around.
Have you tried VR?
No, I haven't.
Well, then...
No, I have. No, wait, did I? I believe I did once.
There's a reason why people act like 5-year-olds the first time they try it. It's a neat trick.
Sure.
It's a very neat trick. It's very good at what it's supposed to do. It's also my reason for not liking it so much, because after I get cut off from reality for too long, I'm like, that's weird.
And remember Virtuosity?
You want that to be
the
down.
Future? Remember that movie Virtuosity?
I do not.
What was the one that took place around like the turn of the millennium, and it's like there was like a drug thing to virtual reality? Was it Virtuosity, or was that the one with Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe? Which one was Virtuosity? I think I'm confusing my movies together. Virtuosity was the Denzel Washington. Yeah, it was that one. That's not the one I'm thinking of. That was a 1995 science fiction movie with Russell Crowe and Denzel. Not the one I'm thinking about. Think about the other one. Think about the other one. So what did I do this weekend, you might ask, Ian?
I might. Oh, we both went to baseball games.
We did. Why don't you mention that? Something real, not virtual.
Get over it. The baseball game was great. We went with five buds. We did a baked good bro down.
What game did you see, Ian?
We saw Angels Mariners. Angels Mariners exchanged coffee cakes, cookies, pies.
Did you bring back coffee cake for Pat?
The coffee cake was immediately consumed. It was by Porto's in LA, and it was one of the most amazing things I've eaten. Mm. Now that I know this, perhaps I can get you a coffee cake next time.
So it was a good time to be around people?
It was. Yeah.
Were you in a vaccination section? Or
I don't think they had them up there. It was just all the seating was very spaced out, and we bought a group of six seats, like two here, two here, two here, and we just made our little pod.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Who won?
Angels.
So you're a Mariners fan? I forget.
I'm a Padres are the only California sports team that I like.
Okay.
Angels.
I just love the A's colors.
I like the Oakland A's colors, yeah, but
green and yellow. No one else has colors like that.
No, it's really nice.
And like all of sports, no one has that green and like goldish yellow color.
It is pretty unique.
I went to see the Mets were in town. I hadn't been to a baseball game since 2018, because 19 I skipped. Then there was a fucking global pandemic, a certain public health crisis. So I went, Frank flaked on me. Not cool, Frank. Then I went by myself to a baseball game. I spent the premium on a Saturday night game. I usually don't go to Saturday night games because you get home at like 11. Baseball games take a long fucking time to get through, even when they're low scoring. And that's when I'm watching a game like, wow, we're like halfway through the game and it's been over 2 hours already. It's they're always the same amount of time. They're always 3.5 hours, it seems, no matter what. It doesn't matter if they're 18-4, 10-2, or 1-0. They take forever. Anyway, so Jacob DeGrom was pitching for the Mets. That's why Mr. Met shirt. I'm wearing it. The shirt's fitting better now than 15 years ago when I got it. My sister got it for me. And the Mets won 4-0. Jacob DeGrom is the best pitcher, arguably, since Bob Gibson. He had three hits. He gave up three hits in seven innings, one walk, and 11 strikeouts. And he did not throw a fastball under 100 miles an hour, it seemed, for the first six innings. Because I was looking at the gun on the LCD screen in center field. I was like, that's incredible. And I looked up later, I'd never been done before, throwing that many 100-mile-an-hour pitches in one game. He threw like 33. Something insane. And he hit 101 a few times. He can hit 102. He's hit 102 this year. Yeah. Pleasure to watch in person. You get a real feel for how hard it is to hit a baseball when these professionals are looking foolish. Guys are striking out like three times. It was fun. I got my hot dog, my $6.50 hot dog, my $6.20 Diet Coke bottle.
What'd you put on your dog?
Oh, mustard and relish. They give you, though, at Petco, they give you a little cup of diced onions I put on that.
Yes.
That's a nice little bonus.
I like to do the brown mustard and the onion. Relish is also a good
choice. I
don't have
to have brown mustard at the they do it on the giant pumps.
Yes, in the big pumps they do. Yeah.
But I ordered through the app, and they just delivered it to my seat in like 10 minutes. Yeah, there's a little app.
Nice.
And you put, hey, here's my seat, and they come up to you, they give it to you, like, oh, you this person. It was fun. It was interesting because being around the people, and the park was only 15-20% full. They had only, I think, maybe 5 to 10 sections where that was like you had to show a vaccination card or a proof of negative test. I went to one of those sections, so it was more filled up. They still weren't doing 100% of the seats, but it was still loud and raucous, and people were booing and yelling, and there was a crazy guy next section that was booing DeGrom, and I yelled at him, and I was yelling. It was back to normal. I was yelling at people for booing DeGrom. I said, it's the best pitcher in the last 50 years, and people are going to be like crazy. I get hyped up at baseball games. But there's Mets fans around. Mets fans, there was a whole section of Mets fans down below. It was fun. It was worth the money.
The people were pretty nice at the game we were at, too.
People were nice, but they're getting rowdy. But they're back to normal.
No, yeah, they are. But I think a lot of people, the people who worked specifically at Angel Stadium just seemed really happy to like see people coming to baseball
games. It's nice to be around
all people. The old dudes with the straw hats that just watch the stairs and shit. Hey, how you doing?
And then walking in the gas lamp a little bit, you know, you see the groups of people out, you see the group of gals out looking dressed up nice, and you see, you know, people out on dates, and it's nice to see, you know, people again.
Yeah.
Hanging around.
Hopefully, it's kind of nice.
Hopefully they're vaccinated. We're ahead of the curve, I think, on the vaccination stuff. So, yeah, that was fun. That was fun. That was my weekend. A reminder, Flea Market Madness, 39. 39 is out. Take a gander. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. And then Video Game Years will re-premiere on my YouTube channel. We're going to do one a week, Ian, of all... What is there, 13 episodes of that? Something like that. One a week. It'll be the summer of the video game years starting next Monday, June 14th. And it'll be a YouTube premiere, and you might want to stop in. We're going to do them around, I don't know, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, something around there, maybe 4 or 5. And they're remastered in HD. Going to be the whole hour blocks or whatever, 45-minute blocks. And it'll be fun to do the premiere. We needed a new kind of new home for them. Screenwave Media now owns the Retroware channel. We wanted to re-release higher versions anyway, or better versions, you know, and obviously have it monetized so we can do that. So that'll be fun to do that. You can see yourself, Ian, how you looked 9 years ago when we shot these things.
No, will not.
We shot them over like a two and a half year period. All of them.
Yeah. Can't go back in time. Look at myself.
You looked like you were 12 in some of those.
I know.
Fresh-faced. Gaming gadfly Ian.
I was young.
Pre-podcast Ian. Pre-social media Ian, really.
I looked young until I got those gut issues. Once I got the gut issues, I started to age.
That was 2016. Yeah. Fall, right when the book came out. Right after the book came out. It's like October. Yeah, it was when we were doing our completely unnecessary Let's Play that lasted two sessions.
Yep.
Super Mario Brothers movie has an extended edition out, if you're interested, on what is it? Archive.gov? No, archive.com.
Archive.gov.
It's not government. Yes. So they got from VHS sources and work print versions, and they're remastered by someone. It's in VHS quality, though, but there's people that have a fond love of this movie. And, you know, our pal Norm, the gaming historian, did a whole documentary video on
it. It's archive.org.
It's an org. That's right. I'll do an aside for that later. So check it out if you want to watch it. Maybe we'll get a real re-release someday in like Blu-ray quality, because it is on Blu-ray and DVD, but you know, they got to go back to the freaking reels and get the deleted scenes because they're not remastered ever, that footage. So
the Morton Jankel cut.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the movie? I still haven't seen this thing.
I saw it in theaters. My grandma took my brother and I.
What did you think at the time?
I thought it was not great. But it was a movie.
It was before your steampunk tendencies and all the.
Yeah, I'd probably like it more now. I mean, I was a kid when that movie came out.
Or cyberpunk, right? It's not steampunk, cyberpunk sort of stuff.
I would find it probably interesting to watch again, but I'm not in a hurry. I mean, but what did I think at the time? I remember I got to go to the movies with my grandma. I got popcorn and candy. It was fine. It was a good time. That's what I remember. I just remember it being very like, this isn't at all like Mario.
I mean, you should probably realize that for the commercials. Yes,
I did.
Good old Leguizamo and Bob Hoskins. Rest in peace, Bobby Hoskins. Go to ultimatenintendo.com. You can find not for resale Blu-rays, NES and SNES guidebooks, RBI baseball stickers, enamel pins. It'll make you feel better, especially after you lost a character in D&D that weekend. It'll make you feel good.
Yeah.
Make you feel special, warm inside.
Get a memento.
Get a memento. Bring a memento home. A keepsake. Ian.
A keepsake.
That's like a Hallmark ornament.
A keepsake.
I'm on cameo.com.
That's the nicest way to say fucking useless garbage.
Tchotchke.
That's a keepsake.
Stuff your grandkids will look at and throw away when you're dead and gone.
Oh.
I'm on cameo.com/PatContry.
Shelves full of keepsakes.
And I'm on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ContryCode. So it's 80s commercials. But last week, Ian, I had a sponsored stream by Raid Shadow Legends.
Wow.
Speaking of you know, D&D influence there, and elves and orcs and knights and stuff, and it was fun. It's a damnly fine constructed free to play game.
You said you enjoyed it.
I'm not just saying that because I was sponsored. I went way past my sponsored minimum, you know, time limit that was set for me. And there's a reason why it's played by tens of millions of people, like, because it's easy to get into. And yes, you can buy stuff to advance your character. You get champions. You get Ian. You unlock them with mystery shards. They're basically like cards. Like, it's random. There's five levels of champions, from common to, like, legendary. And you can level up all your characters. They have different, like, it's like a paper, rock, scissors system between, like, spirit, magic, and force. But then there's, like, a purple one in the middle that's special. You can level up your artifacts and your weapons and stuff. And you can ascend your character. Like, there's like 17 ways to, like, improve things that you lose track of it. But they give you a lot of free stuff. You get, like, a lot of free stuff that you don't have to constantly buy stuff. And you can just play without buying it. You can. And I'll put a little referral code somewhere, maybe, if you're interested in checking it out. You don't have to. But no, I had fun playing it. And it's compatible on your phone and your PC. It's the same account.
Did they send you any keepsakes or mementos?
They gave me, I think, a starter pack for the stream. So they gave me, like, I got an epic character. A legendary character.
I thought maybe, you know, a keychain or...
I got Krilla.
Or small tasteful figurine.
I called her Orc Lady because there's certain characters that have auras that are, like, real, like, they're not just, like, generic knight person. They're real people. So I got Krilla to something, which is, like, the powerful Orc Lady. So I like her. She has a nice team-up attack. But no, it's fun. You should try it. You know, we can fight each other. Potentially, we can compare who has the best characters. What about this Nintendo Gallery Museum that's going to be opening?
I mean, sure, it's a thing. It's happening. They're going to be opening a Nintendo Museum in one of the old card production facilities, I believe is what it says. And it will go over the history of Nintendo. I think this is actually a pretty good idea, and they'll probably do a great job with it. Definitely wish it was something I could visit a little bit easier than having to go over there.
I'm sorry, Ian. Yeah. Maybe you can get on your VR headset and you can walk through with your hands.
You are a crab butt.
I have an excuse this morning, Ian.
A crab butt.
I have an excuse.
Crab butt. The site of Nintendo Gallery was built in 1969. Nintendo moved to the Kyoto suburb due to a need to expand and reinforce its existing game department. The plant was used to manufacture both playing cards and Hanafuda cards and later housed a customer service center. However, the building has sat unused since this work was transferred to the current Uji plant in 2016. So that's what they're going to do with the building.
They had the real estate. We're going to use it. Good for you, Nintendo.
Yeah.
You got the cash. You don't have to sell the buildings, you know. They said it was going to be more of an experience of Nintendo versus, like, pure, you know, year-by-year sort of walkthrough of it. So it's going to be probably curated. This is what Nintendo stands for. And, you know,
It's definitely going to be one of those company type museums.
Yeah.
But it'll probably...
They'll skip over the Love Hotel.
Probably, yes.
Love Motels, whatever it is. You know, whorehouses, nice way of putting it, basically. You know, right? But you go there just to get laid. You ever hear the places? There was one near me when I was a kid about 10 minutes away that was legendary. They actually had, like, the themed sex rooms. It was like the jungle room. Like, there was one known.
I grew up in Buffalo, and Niagara Falls Boulevard is just full of those little motels that you can rent by the hour or the day.
Did they have the themes, though?
I don't know. I've never.
There was one that had themes.
There's, like, Lover's Court, and, like, yeah, there was some weird ones.
Yeah. That'd be bad to be on the cleaning staff there.
Oh, it'd suck.
Just hose it all down, get on your hazmat suit. Cloud gaming, is it the future? And EA CEO says it may be.
It is. Sure, it is the future. But in the far future, when this is doable.
We'll be dead.
I don't think we'll be dead necessarily.
I'm dead now inside.
Well, there's a difference between that and actually being dead. Yeah, it is. It is the future, but it's not now. The future is not now. The future is the future. And
thanks, Ian.
I don't like to... Why are we talking about Stadia? I hate it.
Speaking of fortune...
I got nothing to say about it.
EA CEO Andrew Wilson said...
the online needs to be better.
Yeah, he was asked about the future of game distribution and was quick to bring up cloud gaming as a big part of that future. He says that cloud streaming will disrupt the gaming industry as consumers move from ownership over games to access to games. Yeah, you like that because you like games as a service, Mr. EA CEO. You'd love that. There's no more ownership of games. You'd fucking love that.
You love everything as a service.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd love that. You got to have, you know, a fucking subscription to play your game. He also said that cloud technology will still need a few more turns of innovation to get to the point. Yeah, a few more large fucking cranks.
Yes.
to get to the point where it's ready to replace traditional experiences, but it's a foregone conclusion that the industry will get to that point. No, it's not. It's not. Nothing's ever a foregone conclusion, especially when you have developing nations and even parts of the U.S. where you're out in the sticks and it's hard to get even reliable internet. Like, these are real issues. In the city, yeah, you're going to be fine probably, but not everywhere. Not everywhere. That's the issue with cloud gaming. That's the issue. So, how's that Diet Coke, Ian?
It's fucking delicious.
I should have just snuck one into the Padres game. But it was worth it, the experience.
I love Diet Coke.
Hearthstone Pro Rage Quits and Grandmasters Final. This is brought to our attention. This is just real quick. This is interesting because this is what happens when you have children that are in a professional environment, in, you know, in environments that don't...
At first, I just wanted to trash this guy. And now, no, at the same time, it's like the dude's 20 and it's...
Well, you're not a kid anymore.
You're not a kid, but like...
You can't rage quit actual sports.
Yeah.
So stop comparing video games to sports. It's not. And the environment for, like, this talks about, like, some... He was getting called up by some pro gamers saying, you know, where's the sportsmanship? There's no sportsmanship in video games. We're not. It's not like evolved to that point where people act right when playing video games. And it may never due to anonymity, and the fact that there's no accountability when you're playing online games to curse and scream and to be an asshole. I don't know. I'm not shocked that this would happen in an actual tournament with an actual pro.
I imagine that trying to introduce any sort of sportsmanship into online competitive gaming would probably result in you getting called a flurry of slurs.
Yeah. It's just not... That's the one thing about Little League. Yes, you had creepy coaches sometimes that may touch your arm you didn't like when you were five. But you learn sportsmanship and teamwork. And that's something. Those are good qualities when you're playing T-ball in Little League. And I don't see that being a thing with video games anytime. So I just don't.
I wish it was. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like anti-sportsmanship. I wish people would be nice when playing games online.
Yeah. Fuck sportsmanship. They made you go good game, you know, on the line when you were five, even though you lost. Even though the coaches would say, oh, it was a tie game. Yeah, coach, I'm five. I can count. We got our asses kicked in T-ball, you know, 10-3. They try to do that. Like, it's like, come on, who are you kidding? You learn to lose also. You got to learn how to lose gracefully and accept loss as a part of life. And that's the one thing I do hate about, you know, that sort of quintessential trophy fucking gender. Everyone gets a participation trophy. That is bullshit, by the way. That's all I'll say, old man Pat. Anyway, speaking of old men who should go away. So Billy Mitchell and Todd Rogers, the alleged video game cheats.
Go
for the records,
away,
are suing you. More and more people. I want to bring this attention. I want to put a spotlight on this. YouTuber, speedrunner, and YouTuber Carl Jobst out of Australia, fan of the podcast. He has a GoFundMe set up, a legal defense fund for the people that are getting unfairly targeted by Billy Mitchell of Donkey Kong fame and Todd Rogers of Dragster World Record and other alleged fake record fame. They're going after everyone, unfortunately. I'll link the GoFundMe for these to defend people from these frivolous lawsuits. They are suing, and they're also threatening now Carl for putting up the GoFundMe and for doing the video spotlighting this, and it's bully tactics. And it shouldn't win, and it probably won't, but it has to be defended, and not everyone is up to the task or has the money to defend themselves. So it's to support people being targeted, including David Race, the best Pac-Man player in the world, Jeremy Young, the person who originally discovered, this is from the GoFundMe, Jeremy Young, the person who originally discovered that Mitchell's performances were created on MAME, and Jeff Harris, the owner of DonkeyKongForum.com, the current Donkey Kong high score leaderboards. If there are any funds left over, they'll be used to help Twin Galaxies in their current fight with Mitchell, since that's still ongoing for now for years. Funds will be spent entirely on legal fees and lawyer costs. And Carl might have to defend himself as well against, it sounds like, Billy Mitchell, at least. So you got to send up the bullies at some point.
Yeah, fuck these people. If you've got a little bit of money to throw in there, I would suggest maybe doing that.
At some point, you have to defend this stuff and bring them to court, because they want people, they want to try to silence critics and get quick payouts and scare people. It's a giant scare tactic. That's how these bullies win this stuff. They don't actually want to go to court and drag themselves into court and be deposed and have to face a jury. They don't want to go through that.
They've got no ground to stand on. They just know that the threat of the financial ruin is enough to make most people back down.
Yes. Or even the cost of, I got to pay a lawyer to do this. And it's like, but you're going to win. So that's so good. So I'm glad that Carl is helping in this matter here. So good on Carl. Check out Carl Jobst. Is it Jobst? I'm sorry, Carl. I don't know how to pronounce your last name properly. And finally, in light news, it's like when you watch the local news and you hear about rape, murder, and arson. And here's the lighter side of things at the end of the podcast, at the end of the news, you know, local news session. An Among Us chicken nugget sold for a lot of money. Sold for nearly $100,000 on eBay. Chicken nugget shaped like one of those Among Us little guys in a spacesuit.
Little space characters.
It's funny. You can see the tweet there. It has the little legs. And they don't have arms, the Among Us characters. They don't get a little arms?
No, the knife just kind of floats in front of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They have like telekinesis powers.
Mm-hmm.
I almost played a game once. It seemed fun. I almost played.
I downloaded it on the Switch, started it up, didn't know what I was doing, and immediately got stabbed and jettisoned out the fucking...
They just tossed you out the airlock?
Yeah.
Aliens?
I was supposed to be the bad guy. Like, the first game I ever played, the first game of Among Us I ever played, I was the one who was supposed to pretend like he was doing everything, and I've never done the game before.
So you knew you're the guy.
Yeah, within seconds, so they were like,
You're supposed to sabotage stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, you're supposed to sabotage stuff and murder the other players.
But you couldn't pretend.
I it is the wrong position to be playing if you've never played the game before.
What's the odds of that happening? How many people are in each game?
Shit, I don't know. 14, maybe. I think it can have a pretty high amount. I don't know what the total is though.
It was 10. Close to me. How I downloaded Fortnite on Switch and never played it. I was like, I'm gonna finally check out Fortnite, and something told me not to do it because either I was gonna hate it or get into it and play it a lot. And I was like, I didn't like either of those options, so I just didn't. I got to play something I can get out of. Like this Raid Shadow Legends. Oh, it's on my cell phone. I can check it out every now and then. Fortnite sounds like a commitment. It's like a commitment to me.
Yeah.
I want to play the field when it comes to video games right now. Plus, I got, you know, the certain N64 guidebook to work on. I got to play Virtual Chess 64.
Excuse me.
My underrated chess skills are going to come back to play now. Is that it for the intro?
That is. That's it. We're done.
Did we scare one away? I'm sorry, I'm in a bad mood. There was a shipping thing. The Canadian shipping killed me on a recent deal, wholesale book deal. I lost thousands of dollars of potential monies. Well, not potential. I lost thousands of dollars. But we like the AMC stock. We like the stock.
I like the stock.
But what is not telling you to buy or sell it. This is not financial advice when we bring up stocks. We're not professional.
That's why I don't want to talk about them. That's why I just said I had an opportunity to get something with little pain to me.
But crypto is still stupid, and Bitcoin has plummeted again. So there you go.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Stamps.com, Ian. Are you still going to the post office? Still paying full price for postage? Well, thanks to Stamps.com, you don't have to anymore. Mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer. Send letters, ship packages, and pay less. A lot less, with discount rates from USPS, UPS, and more. I've been using Stamps.com for years, Ian. You've heard me talk about it before. Mailing out DVDs, T-shirts, enamel pins, RBI baseball stickers, books here and there. It saves time. It saves money. You don't have to go to the post office. You don't have to wait in line. You don't have to deal with any of that. It's great. It brings all the services of the U.S. Post Office and UPS right to your computer. It's a must-have for any business. With Stamps.com, you get discounts up to 40% off post office rates and up to 66% off UPS shipping rates. Stamps.com is a no-brainer, saving you time and money. It's no wonder nearly 1 million small businesses already use Stamps.com. Stop wasting your time going to the post office and go to Stamps.com instead. There's no risk. And with our promo code CU Podcast, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in CU Podcast to get that special offer. Again, that's stamps.com, promo code CU Podcast. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. All right, Ian.
Yeah, okay. Playdate.
The little handheld that was announced last year in the fall is we had a great update.
Update.
Video that was released. Lots of good information in here.
I don't want to sound like overly effusive, like I'm coming on too strong to Playdate here. But that's how you do a press release. Is how they did it. So it was a good one. Playdate had to delay the product last year due to COVID. They said that we would get an update this year. Came to us a little, it's coming to us halfway through the year. And the update, there was a few main things that were announced. When you can do the pre-orders.
Maybe should we recap what this is first?
Yeah.
For people?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Playdate is a tiny handheld unit. It's a square. It's a yellow square. It has a black and white super reflective screen. There is no backlight. I was right about that.
You shouldn't need it in theory, right?
No, shouldn't need it in theory. Highly reflective screen. Two buttons, an A and a B button, a cross pad, and the neat little gimmick on it is a little crank that folds to the side.
A metal crank
of
that
the
swings
unit
out.
That you can swing out and
rotate. Clockwise, counterclockwise.
So they, you know, have positioned it as basically a cheap handheld system that is going to have a bunch of fairly well-known indie developers making suites of games for it called Seasons. So when you buy the Playdate, when you get the first Playdate, it will come with Season 1. And what Season 1 was going to be was 12 games that release one a week for a series of 12 weeks. And basically, it keeps everyone playing the same thing at the same time so that there's discussion about the games.
You missed the point. I can't believe you missed. It's in collaboration with Teenage Engineering.
I'm going to get to that more when it comes to the stereo dock.
Okay, but I thought that's important to realize this is a real company with hardware experience that they're collaborating with.
So Playdate, yeah. The company
Panic
is the company that's making the Playdate, but they have collaborated with Teenage Engineering to make it. I personally have some Teenage Engineering products. They are extremely well made.
So there's a track record to parts of this company. Like, this is a company that's put out hardware before.
And Teenage Engineering has done lots and lots of hardware. And they know how to make something appealing to use. They know how to get bang for your buck out of their stuff, too. So basically, like I said, to Seasons. So one game a week. That way it keeps kind of the focus on one game that everyone can kind of discuss and play together. Kind of like an accelerated Book of the Month or Game of the Month club. Those things have become, you know, Book of the Month clubs have always been popular.
We all play the same game the same time.
Right. So that's very neat. This update starts with letting you know, well, announced in this update, the 12 games in Season 1 are actually, it's turned into 24.
So you're going to get two a week.
You're going to get two a week.
12 a week. That's nuts.
That's crazy. That's included. So you get 24 games included with the system that unlock over 12 weeks. And the price did get a bump from $149 to $179.99. Given the manufacturing situation and the fact that they're giving you 12 additional games, I can't really fault them for that.
Pat, man, that's like 17% increase. That's not horrible.
Given the price increases we've seen on some things over the past couple of years, this is a very reasonable price increase.
That's not bad.
No.
It's not doubled.
They very nicely announced that pre-orders will begin in July. And
Open
pre-orders.
Open.
Going to get into that in a second. And then they showed a bunch of new games and some clips of old games. Some things I want to talk about real quick.
Well, you want to run down the list bullet points in order or no?
I got here? Sure. We can do that.
Because that's the order of video. So they revealed this stereo dock, which is a cube-shaped, same color of the Playdate yellow, a magnetic dock that's also is a Bluetooth speaker and also charges the device and has a cute little stand. It reminded me this is how they designed it. It reminded me of like those little TVs you take to the beach in the 80s.
Yes.
With a little like stand on the side and it tilts up and there's pen holders on the top.
That is 100% that is very much a Teenage Engineering sort of thing. Just like
like a kitschy a retro thing. Sort of
yes.
thing.
Yes,
because that's the one. Thing
the second I saw that on the update, I was like, TE is making that. That
yeah,
I mean,
that was their idea.
Their design aesthetic is hard to fucking miss.
Yeah, it's like a simple little stand, like a little, like a metal stand in the bottle that probably swings out, and it looks adorable. It's not something when I first saw this, I'm like, wow, this could be something that almost everyone would want to pair with this device, because then it's a way to have it be cute on your desktop and to play music. And it includes their music suite, like their beach theme music suite.
Yeah,
they really, which has like little cute little, like it has little graphics of like the little, yeah. like little sea theme and stuff, like the beach theme. Like, that's a really cute idea and a great way to have your gaming device do something totally removed from gaming that you didn't think you needed until you saw it. Again, this is not going to be included in the stand. We don't know what the price of the stand is going to be. This dock, Sierra dock, that's going to be a large component in terms of how many people are going to buy this. Hopefully it's like $50 or so, like a Bluetooth speakers are usually not that much money, but you hope something like that. It won't be that powerful probably, but we'll see, you know, how powerful the speakers, but it's just a cute little way to incorporate into your everyday life. Have it on your little desk. You can look at your little Play-Doh and play music. Like, it's brilliant.
It's a neat way to tackle the charging dock situation and make it something much more interesting.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it and I go, well, this is not something people need. And Teenage Engineering is very good at making things people don't need that are very appealing. But you look at it and you go, this is my charging station. And it, like you said, it displays it nicely and it has the added bonus of having the music included with it.
It makes it a second device.
Yes.
It's an upsell, obviously. If it's cheap enough, I can picture like the majority of people wanting to get this thing.
Yes.
That's the key. I mean, it's a Bluetooth speaker, so I'm hoping it's not going to cost that much money. It shouldn't cost $100 for a
They've month. Made very, very nice expensive speakers, but I don't think they're going to be putting that same technology into these.
No, the speaker's too small in this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you can get a freaking big Bluetooth bar speaker for like $45-$50, like a big one. So I can't picture this being a lot of money. But like I said, we'll see. Depends also how well this stuff is made. The Bluetooth speaker, but if it's the same quality as a Play-Doh, you know, yeah, it's just adorable. I said,
Teenage Engineering is known for making. They've made speakers before.
Like, you
so
drop
they can do
this from 10 feet, it still works. Hopefully. So yeah, season one, 24 games. Some of the games looked fascinating, and what I like about the Play-Doh is that, of course, this is the only. These games are exclusive in that they cannot exist outside of this system.
Well, some of them could. But I mean,
not on the hardware, I mean, with the crank especially.
A lot of them that use the crank. They did a very good job in this video of showing what the special features can be used for. Instead of saying, hey, we've got this and that, and it's going to be revolutionary, they actually took the time to show you what these can be used for. So the one game, the first game I think they ever showed was by Keita Takahashi, the guy who made Katamari Damacy. Mm-hmm. That's the one where you rotate the crank and you make the robot run through the landscape.
They get suplexed at the end.
Yeah. Does a really good job of showing off the crank. The driving game, they showed a driving game that shows off
the
crank really well.
Like a single screen driving game with the crank. It's your wheel, basically. That's fantastic.
But I think one of the games that showed off the use of the crank best is actually, it was just announced in this this video, and we were going to talk about it, was the Wipeout. Now I can't remember the full name of the game. The surfing game that's coming from Chuhai Labs. That looks like the old California games surfing. Whitewater Wipeout. Looks like a mixture of like the TNC surfing and the California games surfing. And that's great because you surf along the wave, and as you go up and you need to spin, you actually rotate the crank to do the spinning, and it makes a lot of sense. I also want to point out that Chuhai has, I don't know if they planned this, but with their two games that they've produced, they have now become the premier developer of games that involve you spinning boards with your feet.
Extreme sports.
between carved snowboarding and this, they really have
skateboarding's next.
Yeah, a niche. And then there's other like more clever uses.
There's a little like pinball sort of one with the ball going around.
Yep, I thought that looked really cool.
There's like an adventure game, like a noirish looking adventure game.
Yep.
Where you have to like solve some sort of mystery. Lost Your Marble. That's the marble.
Yeah, that one looked really good to me. And then there was one that was only shown as early development. I wish I could remember the guy's name, but the guy who made Papers, Please and Return of the Obra Dinn is working on one that looks like it makes you a doorman at a club for Martians. And it was a very simple use of the crank, but it was satisfying. You hear a knock at the door, and he literally turns the crank to do like that
little slot in
that
the window.
Little eye slit thing, and then you can look around and see what's out there. And I have no idea what that's going to be, but it looks neat. And
but Dev said
see
he has no idea what it's going to be.
But I like, want to see where it goes.
It's. I'm not saying all these games are going to be super simple concepts, but when you're forced, it's like anything else. When you're forced to do something that's simple in any form of art, it makes your mind work harder to make something unique. And that's why I like this console.
Me too. People looked at it, and instead of just trying to put every other game that's ever been done on another system on there, or you know, resorting to shovelware, the games that we've seen have clearly... The Playdate has caused some inspiration to develop.
This isn't just a Game Boy. Yeah, you can do a Game Boy style game, but this isn't the point of this so far, what we've seen.
Simple additions and restrictions lead to...
You got a fishing game.
Lead to, of course.
Real steel.
Lead to people... doing great things. And that's what I like about this. We're going to actually see unique things come out of this.
Yes. I'm more bullish on this than I thought I'd be after seeing this. I'm like, this is well thought out. They have talented people involved. They actually have hardware being shown that's finalized. And like, that's what you're going to get.
And these are developers that have a pedigree behind them, too. People like Ben Foddy, Zach Gage, Kaita Takahashi. We've got the people at Chuhai. So these are developers that know what they're doing.
And they're trying something new. It's like, okay, let's it's like a collective of like, okay, this is an interesting community we're going to build up from the ground up. It's great that they got everyone on board.
It's very exciting. And it's very reasonably priced.
Yes, it is. More importantly, that they touch on for now, we have more details about their game builder called Playdate Pulp.
Jesus,
that builds upon the fact that included will be this game editor that you can use on your computer and you don't need any coding knowledge to make your game. And obviously we've seen this, they even touched upon the predecessor, I forget which one, they mentioned the name one, God, I forget it. They're crawling, they're standing on the shoulders of other ones that have been developed the past years, these simple game builders that are online, that you'll be able to make your own game and then put it on your Playdate and try it out.
Yep.
And I can see that being something where, well, if they create their own store, maybe they can curate games or that leads to that.
Like, or there'll be a website, dedicated to sideloading these games on your company.
Sure.
But I'm so excited.
Hey, if you want to make your own little RPG, go ahead and do it. But like, try to be inventive and you incorporate the crank to do stuff. And I think it's a simple thing. It's like, okay, we added one unique feature, the crank, forcing everyone to think of a way to use this uniquely for each game. And I think that I underestimated how brilliant that could be. The fact that just that crank alone makes this an entirely different type of system.
Yeah. Like I said, you take something that seems so silly, you take a system that's got restrictions that already brings up creativity, but then you restrict it, but then you add one thing.
Something that
you add one thing that nothing else has ever had. And they don't require that you use this crank, but a lot of people are going to be drawn to it because it's going to create a lot of very interesting small experiences.
And it's tactile,
but it obviously got everyone's creative juices flowing.
And it's tactile.
Yeah.
You can say, oh, it's just like an analog. It's tactile. You go back and forth. You can slow it up easier. It's a piece of metal on the crank. There's something interesting here. It's like closer to like a pinball machine, how you're interacting with the machine. So no, and in terms of the actual presentation, like you touch on, I mean, they obviously, you know, it's kind of like the same style as the Nintendo Direct, which has become like the de facto sort of like professional, clean style, but still fun. They knocked it out of the park.
They showed a lot of they said what they needed to. They came across as friendly. They didn't waste a lot of time. They showed a lot of content. They showed games. They showed
dozens of games.
They showed people playing games. They showed games using the unique features. They made their case for their system very well. And then I also want to commend them for the end of the presentation where they announced the pre-orders and very clearly say, look, we don't, again, we talked about this, but I really love how clear and transparent they're being with their customer base. We don't think we're going to sell out. These are going to go up in July. We're not going to close these orders.
But first order, first get.
First come, first serve.
Because of manufacturer.
So hopefully we'll have enough for everyone to get this first batch at the same time. But if not, just place your order and we'll put you in a queue and we'll let you know when you're going to get it. And we're going to manufacture until we can get these out. There is no fear of missing out. There's no, you know, obviously if you want one right away, sure, get up and do it. But there's no fear of missing out. There's no worry of scalpers.
Money back anytime.
They said
we're going to be transparent with you along the way.
And they said, yeah, very well be delays, but they're going to let you know early and they're going to let you know quick.
They said we're going to be transparent, let you know. So I'm like, wow, this is like the best PR ever. You said exactly all the things I whine about all the time, meaning about like when companies go bad. This is exactly how you do
PR. They didn't, but I feel like they went through our checklist of complaints about
said, okay,
previous.
What's Pat E saying? Okay, we got that.
They literally hit everything on
which
on
is
that,
again, so. Some weirdos got after us because again, there's two companies we harped on in general about us. The Play Magi was the worst offender with the console that's still not out. The Poly Mega. It's like, they're like, well, they don't have to be transparent to you guys. It's like, it looks fucking horrible when you don't do good PR. It's not just bad for your existing customer base, but any potential people or anyone looking at like, what's going on with this company?
Right.
We just don't know what's going on with the Poly Mega, by the way. We have no clue. They've missed so many dates of getting this thing out, which is not always their fault, but you got to let people know what's going on.
Yeah, it's one of the rare times where I really want the product and I'm going to feel fairly comfortable about giving my money to the people making it.
Yeah, they got the infrastructure in place. They got the games lined up. Like I said, I'm really interested that they didn't mention the pool suite. That's the suite with the dock. I want to know the stereo dock price. I want to know. They're too early to know the final locked-in price on that. But they showed it being used. So yeah. They got it. They got at least a working prototype or production prototype. For that, yeah, I'm in for one, Ian. I'm in. We're in the silver age of handhelds. Like I said before, we got the analog pocket going to be coming out, and we got the Playdate.
The Evercade is out. People are loving that.
We got the Evercade, and then we got the one I always forget to buy, the Ardu Boy.
So Ardu Boy, I love the Ardu Boy, and I'm actually excited. The Ardu Boy finally shipped out their first batch of the Ardu Boy FX units, and they're doing pre-orders for those now too, so I'm actually probably going to get one, even though I have two standard Ardu Boys. The Ardu Boy FX is essentially, it's the same, but it's got a multi-cart built in with 200 of the games from the community. It makes it a lot easier. You don't have to constantly swap stuff in and out.
Maybe I'll pick that one up. Maybe I'll start like the 2020s handheld collection.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought? Who'd have thunk, Ian?
I'm in. I'm so happy. So happy.
You're in what is it? Is it Hog Heaven? That's the
term. Hog Heaven.
Hog Heaven.
Hog Heaven.
Oink oink.
Ow.
You okay, Ian?
Oh.
Do you want to do a See a Podcast game? We can incorporate the crank for like the microphone going away from us and coming forward to talk into. That could be like a rhythm game.
I was going
to
say like some sort of See a Podcast rhythm game, right? Yeah.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Well, we have developer friends now out there. we'll call it On the Mic. There you go. That'll be our game. All right, Ian, we had a minicab that was announced by Taito, the Egret 2 Mini. And it's interesting. Usually news like this we would just hold for like, it's a short intro topic. It's not really worth talking about for more than a couple minutes. But this one sort of scratched my brain a little bit. Sort of itched at my interest. That's not really a term. So it's a Taito. Mini cab, similar in scope to the Neo Geo one that came out about a year ago, and there's also like the Sega one. So you know they're like a foot tall,
yeah,
roughly. It's enough. It's room for one person. So this is gonna have a bunch of Taito games, 40 games preloaded. It's also gonna be the expansion controller is gonna have an SD card with 10 games that use the PAL or Trapple, which we'll get into. So there's a lot of stuff. There's only some of the titles have been confirmed so far, which we'll get into in a moment. So it's going to have a 5-inch LCD screen. The big thing about the screen is it can be rotated for vertical arcade games.
This is awesome.
You could. So this is the first time I remember seeing this on something. You pull out the screen and you physically rotate it. That's
which is
so cool.
Which is how you do it on a real arcade cabinet.
So it's really cool.
But
that
it's awesome.
And then you pop it back in. That's fantastic. So I guess it reorientates itself almost like it probably has like a cell phone type of, you know, gyro.
Either that or just, I'm sure it's got a separate menu for that.
Because to remind people that a lot of the 80s arcade and the 70s were, they had vertical displays.
Pretty much all scrolling shooters and a lot of the stationary shooters, like even Space Invaders uses a tall screen.
A lot of the early games, even the Namco ones, did a vertical screen. So, it looks like the Sega's Astro City Mini in terms of the white color. You know, the Japanese style.
It's similar. All candy cabs share a similar design.
They're thick boys, and they got that like creamish white color.
Yeah.
On there,
thick boys.
So it's based upon the original EGRIT 2 cabinet. I didn't know you could rotate. Okay, I had no idea that the original cabinet was like that.
You technically can on all cabinets. I don't know if that's necessary. I don't know if this has a special mechanism for it.
It seemed like the original arcade was it. They're basing it off of that. So okay, so. The it has a standard, ball top joystick. It has six buttons on it. There you go. This is the games that it's going to come with before we get into the expansion stuff, which I'm kind of semi excited about. You're going to get this is out of the 40 confirmed. This is what you get: Space Invaders, Lunar Rescue, Good Old Kicks, Elevator Action, Chack and Pop, Bubble Bobble, Rastun Saga, Woo, Rainbow Islands Extra, New Zealand Story, The Cute Little Kiwi, Don Doko Don. I've heard the name, not familiar. Violence Fight. Heard the name. It's probably one you put in front of me. I know what it is when I see it. Kadash, Liquid Kids, Metal Black. Haven't heard of that.
Metal Black is a shooter, and Liquid Kids is another. It's more of a platformer, but it still has kind of like the bubble bobble type. You throw bubbles, and it makes water. It's a great game.
And Kaiser Knuckle. Not familiar with that. It's like I'm going to look that up. Is that a German fighting game? Kaiser Knuckle?
That sounds familiar, but I can't tell you if I've actually played it.
So that's not all the games.
No, it says it's coming with
40. Oh, it's a fighting game, Kaiser Knuckle. Oh, okay. That's a newer fighting game.
Explains the six buttons then.
So these are games from all eras. Mm-hmm. You got 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Oh, you're going all the way back to, Space Invaders, all the way up to, the late 90s.
So before I get into the extra accessories, Taito has a pretty robust arcade library.
Oh, yeah.
It's way stronger than something like Data East. Taito's like a notch above that.
No, Taito's great. They have some of my favorite arcade releases. Zookeeper better fucking be on here.
So I'm excited just from that alone that, this could be something that, I have not pulled the trigger on any of these before. I think I almost bought the Neo Geo one that was on sale, but the Neo Geo had the problem with the joystick being squishy and not reactive, didn't have micro switches in it. And,
I almost bought the Astro City. I might still, but I haven't.
So that's interesting. But outside of this, it's going to cost about $170. Yep. So that's a little bit pricier than you expect. But you got the rotating cabinet, you got 40 games. So it has a couple of accessories that I think are cool. It has three accessories. I'll go in least importance to most importance. It has a standard six button like D-pad extra controller with a gamepad. Then it has basically a double joystick layout of what you get. It almost looks like it can pop out from what it was, and it has your ball top joystick and six buttons. Okay, who cares, right? Now it has the special controller that has a mini trackball, and a spinner and two action buttons on it.
That's what gets me.
And it includes games designed for that.
Yes, it includes. So there's going to be 10. They've only announced six, but Strike Bowling, Arkanoid, Plump Pop, Civalion, Camel Tree, and Arkanoid Returns. I love something you've probably picked up about me if you listen to the podcast is that I really love arcade games that use special controls that aren't joysticks and buttons.
It gives
you
a reason to play it. Yeah.
And what I hate is when those get ported and they try to shove them into a joystick control scheme. It never works. So being able to play some of these neat games, Arkanoid is. You're not playing Arkanoid unless you're playing Arkanoid with a spinner.
Yes, it's a totally different experience.
Yeah, absolutely different. So hopefully the spinner is of decent quality.
Sylvalian, I got to look it up. That's that weird shooter where you're a dragon.
Yes.
I always forget that one. Was that on Genesis?
I don't believe so.
I'm trying to remember what console that was on. Strike Bowling, I'm trying to see what era, if that was an early bowling game or not. 82, that's an early one, but that's, it's still probably fun to play that. those early bowling games. And then, of course, Arkanoid is the king of the ball, you know, paddle and ball games.
And Camel Tree will be really cool, too. Camel Tree uses the trackball. It had a release on the Super Nintendo, but I can't remember what they called it here.
You rotate a maze around.
Yeah, you rotate a maze and...
Well, kind of like that one coming on the Playdate, kind of sort
of. So Camel Tree will be fun on that. What the fuck did they call it in the U.S.?
The box art on Camel Tree in the Super Nintendo is literally a camel looking at the ball. It's a funny looking logo there. So, okay. So we have something that differentiates this Mini from the Neo Geo one already and from the Sega one, the two most famous, you know, mini cabinets, right? So that's the one thing I like to point out when I look at this.
On the ball. That's what it's called on the Super Nintendo.
On the ball?
Yeah.
So, again, it comes down to price and you're interested in the rest of these games. And you do get the SD card slot with this paddle trackball controller. So, yeah, they're kind of paywalling the ability probably to... I thought you shook your head. No. Paywalling you maybe to... jailbreak it and put on other ROMs?
I thought there was a SD card on the main unit, too.
I don't see that listed here in this Verge article. But it is with the paddle, though. No, there is an SD card.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the expansion says... No, it just says SD card with 10 games preloaded on the trackball. So, okay, we have to reconfirm that if it's going to have an SD card. Oh, no, there is an SD card. I'm sorry, I'm an idiot. So, it's not paywalled. All right, cool. So... It's spendy, though. If you want everything, even if you just want minimum, the unit and the expansion controller is going to cost you
$300.
Almost $300. $280.
Yeah.
The extra little arcade stick is $80 for the mini little. That's pricey.
So that's where I pass. I mean, as much as I like this, $300. You can do a lot with $300 that isn't this. And I mean, I love it.
Like, and then they force you to get...
I can't.
If you want to get everything... get the limited bundle that has the base unit, the three extra controllers. You get a soundtrack for $450. And I'm looking at the money. I'm like, let's say $110, $280. You're not really saving anything by getting that bundle. It's like you're not.
It's just to keep you from having to hunt it all down.
Yeah. So yeah, that it's a shame. Hopefully, you see a sale. This comes down. I mean, God, even if that controller was only like $60. I think that would be like impulse, but okay, $60 for the controller, I'll go.
My
for
only
it.
Hope is that $110, you're getting a metal fucking spinner on there.
Oh, it better it looks metal. When you look, it better damn it, well be sure. For that much money.
Yes,
I mean, metal spinner
better be a weighted goddamn metal spinner.
At this
point,
almost all the aftermarket ones are cute little mini spinner. Yeah, that's the only thing that I'm sort of down on is the overall price when it comes to that. But no. And then plus they haven't revealed the rest of the games yet. I'm not sure if they're doing a slow sort of burn. And okay, we'll get the games out slowly and surely, like how they did that with the Sega. You know, they had to wait on Yawning Triceratops on the Sega Mini, right? No, that wasn't on. That's only on the at games ones, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So all right, we'll see. Like if it goes on sale at Neo Geo one, I'll be on board. At $170 without the extra paddle trackball, that's a lot of money. Oh, by the way, there's also a little marquee thing on top, it looks like. On the picture to add, I guess, little placards for individual games. But I didn't read about it coming with any, though. So, because this is not in English, this trailer so far. Well, there you go. That's our little mini coverage of the week.
Yeah.
Ian, we have a Patreon.
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you give some money. We give.
You give some money. You pledge your support, Ian.
We give thanks in return.
Patreon writing once a week from
Patreon
Ian.
Writing once a week.
Hang out for me
full,
once a month.
Full video podcast.
That's right.
Hangouts and Patreon poll topics that you can vote in.
You, the viewer, can vote on. In second place, we have a 60-40 split. I always like a 60-40 clean split. Retro games / consoles you regretted selling. Oh no, 40%. And in first place, speaking of mini arcades, will arcades ever be a thing again, or are those days long gone?
I don't think they're long gone at all. I think I don't know if it will be a temporary boom, but we're in the process of getting out of the pandemic. We're in the process of vaccinating, getting healthy again and being able to go and do things like we always did. And I think arcades are going to see a huge bump in business during that period of time. I think barcades and arcades in general were doing pretty good prior to the pandemic as well, especially if you add food or booze to them. They were becoming slowly a...
Like a new bowling alley sort of experience, right?
Yes. They were becoming something that people actually did when thought of when they would go out at night. When barcades first came around, they were a novelty. I remember hearing about the first barcade and being like, oh, that's crazy. And they're like, well, it's in Portland. You know, you'll have to go. I mean, it's not like it was the only one or the first one. But
well, there wasn't a lot.
But Ground Control was the big one that everyone knew of.
Yeah.
But now every city has a couple of them. And I think people are really warming up to this idea of going out, having some food and a drink, and throwing quarters into games they used to know. And the great thing about this is it gives a place for newer redemption games and stuff like that to get a home to, which gets people out to check out the new stuff. It's a really nice...
When did Dave and Buster's
blow up? It's Dave and Buster's, but I think it's Dave and Buster's done better, because I don't know of anyone who's ever gone to Dave and Buster's and hasn't said, well, I wish they had something a little bit older here. Dave and Buster's is, you know, I have a good time when I go. I don't go very often, but it's neat. But it is nice to have a fuller mix of the games.
But to the point of, this question, Dave and Buster's still an arcade. You may not like the selection, but it's an arcade.
It is. Yeah. So I know that there was that period of time in like 2005, 2010, even 2015 maybe, where it looked like arcades were really doing poorly. And yes, the arcade business has died down in...
I'd say from 2002 to 2010, it looked bad.
Yeah. And I know the arcade business is dying down in Japan, and that's not, it's sad. We've seen some locations close, especially over the past year. Some locations close that will not reopen, which is a real bummer. That one building of the Sega arcade, and then that one arcade that was like, I can't remember the exact name, but was built to kind of resemble Kowloon Walled City, closed down. But people often forget that when the arcade business in Japan, when you say it's doing badly, the arcade business in Japan is much huger than it is here. So it's not like they're dwindling away to nothing. They're closing, but there's still arcades in a lot of places
in
Japan.
They have a lot
of pachinko
places as well.
They're still very popular.
Parlors.
It's just they can't maybe hold on to the amount of them that they had in like the late 90s and early 2000s.
Sure.
But it's not like there is no arcade culture in Japan.
Per capita,
it exists.
It's way bigger than ours.
Yes, it still exists, just not at the same level that it did when it was exploding in the mid-90s.
I'm looking at the Dave & Buster's history. They have 140 locations right now. They temporarily closed all of them due to the pandemic. So the reason I bring that up, because that's the biggest arcade chain in the U.S. It's like the only arcade chain,
yeah.
Dave & Buster's. That counts. You may not like them. I think they're fine for what they are. It gets people out playing games.
I've had good times at them.
Yeah, they have all the new games. They have redemption machines, and they'll throw a couple of classic, like, you know, like the multi-cage shit in there.
I've found that really depends based on location, but some of them do have stuff. Some of them, it's a multi-cage corner.
Like the local one, which I haven't been to in years and years, I still have the freaking cards laying around. It was fine. It's a fine experience. I mean, we're talking about we're the people. We're the people that want to play like the esoteric and weird shit. Most people don't know that stuff,
right?
You know, so you got to appeal to a large audience. So they did an IPO in 2014. They launched a second IPO in 2014. So Dave and Buster's been doing great the past 10 years at least.
What's before an IPO?
IPO.
Oh, IPO. Gotcha.
It's your stock offering.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it's at now. They raised $94 million used for debt payments. They're on NASDAQ. So arcades will be here for a bit. I think what the pandemic did to a lot of people went stir crazy. People want to do activities. They want to be social. They want to interact, even with strangers. Me going to the baseball game, I wanted to be around. I forgot how it was to be around people. To hear people's voices and to see their emotions and, you know, to see them, to hear them. And
to laugh at someone else's chatter.
To see the idiots that dance on the big screen. People you don't know, but they're having fun. They're dancing. One guy lifted up his shirt and the whole crowd laughed at him, you know, while he was dancing. Like, these are simple things. We are communal creatures. We are not, you know, solitary creatures, humans. So arcades are fun. It's a gathering spot for people that know each other. You play games with people you don't know. Hey, can I play with you guys? Sure. Come. You can be Donatello. We need a... arcades are super important. Even outside of the gaming element, that you can't play some of those games at home easily, and it's not the same experience. Arcades are super important. I mean, I almost invested in a barcade that would have opened potentially if there wasn't a pandemic. We were planning on potentially doing something last year. And I get asked to potentially be involved with other ones. And I might do it at some point still.
My buddy Skyler's opening one at the end of this year.
Is that the plan?
Yeah.
And then this year? So, you know, so there's reasons for these to exist. They've brought back arcade games in terms of they've helped to do preservation, because for a lot of times these were being chucked, these machines. Again, after the late 90s, arcades were dying very quickly. And these games, you couldn't give away some of these games. But now there's like a thriving scene of collectors and preservationists. Unfortunately, that means the price have gone up, but it is what it is. People are interested in this stuff again. Neo Geo machine used to be $150. Now they're several hundred dollars. Like, that's just right. The way
it is. That's still one of the best deals in arcade gaming.
Play Choice 10s, they couldn't give away 20 years ago at auctions. I was there. They couldn't give away a Play Choice 10. Like, that's like $120. It's like, you got to be kidding me. Now you'd be dying for a Play Choice 10. So I think arcades will be around. And I don't think it'll ever at the point where there'll be a bubble, potentially, because it's hard to get a lot of these machines quickly and cheaply. And you need a bunch of arcades and a bunch of machines in order to open a business, a good amount of them. So I think they're going to be, I don't think we're ever going to get to a point like Japan where they're probably, you know, in major cities, it could be one in every other block. I don't know. Or every few blocks. But yeah, every major city probably at this point probably has at least a couple of arcades. We have two barcades here. We're not even counting like Nickel City.
Well, we have Coin House and Coin Op.
I thought it was two Coin Ops.
There's two Coin Ops. Okay. There's two Coin Ops, and then there's Coin House as well.
Okay, so we have three. Okay, I didn't know there was a third one. Oh, okay. I've only been to one of the Coin Ops. I've been to the one Coin Op in North Park.
I think I've been to all three of those.
They're all pretty good?
Yeah.
We don't have one right here. Yeah, I think maybe where we live, there could be room for one, but we'll see. There's a beach town with no arcade. Frankie said there used to be an arcade right by the beach. It was great. It's like kind of shocking there isn't one. But Pacific Beach has an arcade, and Mission Beach has their few little mini boardwalks. So, you know. Does PB have one? I don't know if PB has an arcade. Gotta look that up.
I don't think it does.
That's surprising, being that it's a tourist town. Anyway, so yeah, they'll be around, and they're still making new arcade games. They're still making, Nintendo makes new arcade games for stuff like their Mario Kart games, and a lot of shooting games are still made regularly. The Alien one that came out a few years ago.
Those games are everywhere.
Obviously, pinball machines are made regularly now, every year.
Never thought we'd ever see that.
Yeah, we have now
multiple companies.
Yeah, a handful of companies making machines when we were just down the Stern for like 10, 12, 13 years. You know, we had one in the world, we had one pinball machine manufacturer. That's insane.
Yeah.
So what if Stern said, fuck this, we're out? We would have had none for, a decade. So, yeah. No, I'm happy that we see this. And, now, do I wish there'd be more for kids? Sure. There was the one we had the mall downtown that had an arcade that I think they might went out of business. But maybe we can get Chuck E. Cheese back there. Is Chuck E. Cheese surviving? Are they all closed down? I think Chuck E. Cheese has come back. They're still around. So that's your kiddie version of that. So we got arcades for everyone, Ian. I'm happy about that.
Woo!
Maybe you'll see me. Have my own personalized Rolling Thunder cabinet in an arcade that I go in on with other people. We'll see. This portion of the CU podcast is sponsored by NordVPN. It's what I use to keep myself safe online, and you can too. If you care about the security and privacy of your online presence, take control of your internet experience today with NordVPN. I've used NordVPN when traveling at hotels, restaurants, airport. It's fantastic. Or you just use it at home when you want peace of mind in general when you're on the internet.
NordVPN secures your internet. All your internet data stays safe behind a wall of next-generation encryption. Strict no-logs policy. They don't track, collect, or share your private data. It's none of their business. VPN servers everywhere. Choose from 5,400 and more servers in 59 countries. Enjoy the internet with no limits or borders. P2P is welcome here. Share large files with no hassle. Thanks to hundreds of secure P2P servers. And there's worldwide access. Enjoy instant secure access to hundreds of streaming websites worldwide. It works on multiple devices. One account lets you connect up to 6 of them. Secure them all in any combination. And use with ease. It's just a click. Using NordVPN is as simple and as intuitive as making your morning coffee.
Take control of your internet experience today with NordVPN right now. You can get a 2-year plan at a huge discount at nordvpn.com/CU podcast. and use code CU Podcast to get an additional bonus month free. It's all risk free with Nord's 30-day money back guarantee. Again, that's nordvpn.com/CU Podcast to take control of your internet again. Ian, we got voicemails.
We do.
How do you access the voicemails, Ian? Do you know how to do this yet? Anchor.fm/CU Podcast. That's the home for the audio podcast. You viewers on YouTube, you want to listen to us in your car or on your iPod while you're working out, on your iPhone while you're playing Raid Shadow Legends. You can download it as well. And so you can leave us a short voice message and tell us that you love or hate us. Here's our first one.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Josh. Whoa. What's up? Question for the both of you. Pat, what's the craziest game or anything that you found at the flea market? Ian, same thing for you. What's the rarest game anyone's ever traded into the store? Thanks, guys. Love the podcast.
All right, Josh. Rarest game that has been traded into the store. I think I own that, but is that the rarest thing?
Yeah. Although, I mean, it wasn't an actual... The story is... Yes, that would be that.
Nintendo World Championships.
Nintendo World Championships. The thing that I actually saw during a trade-in that was the rarest thing would be... probably the Vectrex 3D imager that I got.
Was it in the box?
Yeah, it had the extra wheels and everything too.
It had the box?
Yeah.
Oh, it has the one. Oh, I had the. There's two different wheels.
Yeah, had the one for.
I had
the
one that came with Minesweeper and the other one.
For.
Not Minesweeper. What the hell is that damn thing?
For 3D, the Roller Coaster game. I thought there was even another one, but I could have been wrong.
There's two different wheels.
Okay. Yeah.
One
the Crazy Coaster or Roller Coaster one, and then the Minesweeper one.
Yeah. The second wheel works for the other two 3D games.
That's right. Okay.
Crazy Coaster is funny as hell because you go, rah! And you fall off and die off the roller coaster. It's a weird fucking game. What rarest thing I found at the flea market? Well, non-gaming, it would be that a military-grade night scope that I have to get repaired. I got for $10, and at the time it was probably worth $1,000 that I probably should have sold. But anyway, but it's cool. It's like, hey, you got night vision. It worked great. In terms of game, I'm not the person to ask about finding rare games, but from Wario, I did buy a Zombie Nation that he had for like $10 or $15. That's hard to find. That would be the NES game that was the hardest to find that I found for a deal. And then I also found that I have a sealed Marvel vs. Capcom. Was that Marvel vs. Capcom 2 on Xbox, which is kind of uncommon, but it's sealed. So that's something. And a Jaguar complete in box. I mean, it's uncommon, but nothing. I've never found something so rare. I do have a couple of demo prototype lab copies of a few Atari 2600 games that are probably not one of a kind, but, you know, there's probably not a ton of those out there. Those are the rarest things. All right, next.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Nathan from Portland, Oregon, and I was wondering, what's your favorite console based not on library, but on console design and overall aesthetics?
Ian probably has a couple lined up.
Aesthetics.
What consoles do you like just for the aesthetics?
Dreamcast. I love the way the Dreamcast looks. Looks like a weird little futuristic waffle maker. I've always fucking loved the way that system looks.
Oh, okay.
And I do like the way the PC Engine Duo looks, and the original PC Engine is cute. Although there are lots of designs from NEC that I did not like. I'm not a huge fan of the Shuttle PC Engine, which a lot of people
thing?
People love it, but I'm not a huge fan of it.
Why did they do that again? Was that compatible with a different CD?
I can't remember. And then the Super Graphics looks like shit.
No, that thing looks like a weapon, or that looks like a bomb.
It's so weird. It's very, very weird.
No, they went off the rails. The Turbo Graphics design is horrible. They should have made it.
Yeah, the Turbo Graphics.
They should have made it like a PC Engine.
But anyways, this is about the aesthetics that we like. Yes. I love the way.
I like Turbo Express. That's a cute little design.
The second model Neo Geo Pocket Color. I love the slim one. Looks great. I think the Vita is a great piece of hardware. I think the Dreamcast looks awesome. And I'll always like the way the GameCube looks.
Controversial. I like how the original Sega Genesis looks.
Oh, yeah,
looks.
Me too. Yeah, it's a fantastic
system. And pair with the front-loading. I love the combo of that with the Sega CD, the original Sega CD.
Mm-hmm. It looks nice.
I hate the second Sega CD. See, I understand it's less mechanisms. I hate how it looks.
I don't like the way the Model 2 Genesis really looks either. Model 1 Genesis all the way.
Yeah, I hate the Model 2 Genesis. The Model 1 with the... under CD loading.
Yeah.
I love it. I don't know why I did that. Should have went nice. Okay.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Phil. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I used to work at Ground Control, and I met you guys.
What a coincidence.
During one of the things, and you guys came into Ground Control, and I actually played a game of Pac-Man Battle Royale with you. But anyway, this question's for Ian, because we both like beat-em-ups. I love beat-em-ups. What do you feel about the fact that invincibility frames on boss battles, where no matter how much you punch them, they're still going to pull off a super move?
What are you thinking?
They're annoying, but I mean, I think it's all kind of part of learning just how to play the game. It's timing. You got to learn when to go in and when not to go in.
Otherwise, you'd blow through the game.
Yeah. It's one of those things that, like, early on playing beat-em-ups, it always annoyed me. But when I actually kind of relearned how to play beat-em-ups in my head, they're fine.
Like the X-Men game, you got to realize there's a time where you can't attack them. You got to back off, and then you go in for the kill after they do the attack. You know, the same way, like when, after you knock down, you know, Bebop and Ninja Turtles, you got to give them time to reorient. It's you know, it's like an honor system thing.
Yeah, got to get in, get a couple punches in, and back off.
Yeah, that's it. Otherwise, you spend one quarter playing the game. You just slam the buttons. You know, there's got to be some balance to hey, Konami's got to earn their money, and so the operators of the arcades. Okay.
Hey guys, this is Duffy from Louisville, Kentucky. I'm curious as to what your favorite LucasArts or Lucasfilm game is of all time.
God, that's tough. God, X-Wing CD or TIE Fighter CD are brilliant. Those are up there to me.
It's a hard choice for me, but Full Throttle is really, really
it's a really good one.
Good.
I brought that from my friend in high school.
It's not like the theme and all of that wasn't really my thing, but I just remember more like, obviously I love Sam and Max. I do. I love Sam and Max Hit the Road.
Never beat that when I had it as a teen.
And I like Day of the Tentacle. It's funny, but if there was one that I was going to go back, like if you told me, hey, today you've got to go and replay a LucasArts game, I would pick Full Throttle.
I remember liking really it a lot. I played through it twice. I remember the story being fun. I can't remember a thing about it now. And the voice acting was good. I can't remember the plot of that game. But yeah, it was a really good game. Mm-hmm. And it was during that time when they were still doing like the one-off games like that and doing like they did The Dig, right? Was that them?
The Dig was their notorious failure. And The Dig came after Full Throttle.
But they tried.
Yeah, they tried.
They tried to do like these one-off ideas. And now it's just like, oh, everything's Star Wars. Like they tried to do these interesting
It was the era where they could still have IP. They could have their own their own property.
All right, next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Brian from Georgia here. Love the show. My question is for Pat.
Oh.
I was listening to some older CU podcast episodes and heard you mention that you got 2 Lego castle sets for Christmas as a kid. This piqued my interest as vintage Lego castle is one of my favorite things to collect besides video games. Just wanted to know if you had any favorite sets growing up or if you still have any of them today. Thanks.
No, I sold them and I shouldn't have, but you know, you're like the late 90s, you need money or cash.
Right.
Who knows? They'd be worth. I mean, they're not worth a ton of money. They're worth, like, you know, if you got the box, like $150, $200. Favorite ones. I had about 5 or 6. I had the little grayish castle, and I had the bigger black, the Black Marnock castle. I don't know off the top of my head. So I had two castles. I had the Sherwood Forest, which is, I guess, part of the castle collection. It was like the Robin Hood type of little
space. It was like the mini set, I think. It was a smaller set.
I had a fuller one.
Oh, okay.
I had a full.
Oh, I think I remember that
forest one. So I had those three big ones. But what I liked about Lego is they had like three tiers of toys. They had the big ones. Like, let's say with G.I. Joe. The big stuff, the medium stuff, and the small stuff. So I had a little catapult mini set, which is great. It worked. You fired the little, you know, like the little barrel-shaped little peg things.
Mm-hmm.
Fired little guys. And then I had the coolest one I actually had. This is actually my favorite. There was a jousting competition set that was so stupid.
Oh, I think my brother had that.
It had the king and the goblet and the barrel, even on the cover to show him getting the drink.
Yep, yeah.
And the princess. And it came with a couple of knights. And it had the little bar in the middle and a little jousting. And it was probably a cheaper set than my parents. It was probably like a $9 set back in like whenever, 90. When they got it for me. That was probably my favorite because it was so stupid.
But who doesn't want jousting sets?
It really tested your imagination by buying the little additional sets for like the castles. Like, oh, what are they going to do in their leisure time? They're always battling the evil. They got to have fun on you know, they got to relax and unwind on the weekend, right? Nights, they had to. Yeah. I skipped them by accident.
Hey, Pat and Ian, it's Doug from Ohio. I just finished watching the documentary Class Action Park on HBO Max.
I watch that.
was wondering if you guys had any memories of the park while growing up in New York and New Jersey in the 80s and 90s when it was a thing. Thanks.
All the stories were, hey, look at the rash I got this weekend from sliding down the Alpine thing. Or, oh, I heard this guy got hurt, and the people did get hurt and killed. So it wasn't just like stories, because they were highly dangerous things at Action Park. And I think it reopened. They reopened in some capacity. But I never went there. My parents wouldn't have allowed it. I was too young. But, you know, there was a lot of – I was the youngest – it was tough being – I was the youngest boy in my block by 2 years. It was tough being the youngest boy because he got picked on. But you heard the stories from the teenagers. You know, besides them, you know, shoplifting. Hey, how did Scott get a brand new Calgary Flames sweater? Oh, he stole it from Herman's Sports at the mall. But so you're around this not criminal element. They're teenagers shoplifting shit. But you hear them go to Action
Park. All teenagers are a criminal element.
But you hear them go to Action Park and you hear the stories and, you know, people got fucked up. People got fucked up at Action Park. And a handful of people died at Action Park. Usually from the wave pool that would get an electric cue with like a wire that wasn't grounded in like the wave pool, stuff like that. But no, I want to see the documentary.
Yeah, I still need to see that.
It was rumored, but it was confirmed. There was actually on video of the fucking the loop-de-loop slide that somehow was allowed to exist because they had no safety protocols.
So apparently that was open for very.
Yes, because people were, that was like an urban legend until, oh no, we
people
got on
get
video.
Trapped in there.
They got trapped or just fucking fell upside down because if you didn't have the metal, to go upside down a water, like that's insane. That's, you know, quick you got to go to do that, and that's probably not safe to do that anyway. Yeah, that's Action Park though. They did the John, what's his name, did the movie from Jackets, the whole movie basically based upon like an Action Park sort of thing. Which by the way, they're doing one more Jackass movie. Knoxville, he's retiring, he's 50, he's going to. He put himself through one more time, risking his fucking life. God bless him. Jesus, why, Johnny? Why? For you, break a hip.
Hey, Pat and Ian, Brent from Wisconsin here. My mom was one of those who would buy Christmas presents throughout the year, and forget about them on occasion. What? Due to this, I have a sealed Days of Thunder for the NES. How much do you think Heritage would overprice this for? Thanks.
That's funny. Okay, so your mom would buy you presents and forget about them. God, that would be a great childhood to have. Oh, by the way, I got you like 7 gifts throughout the year, and here they are. Well, it's not Heritage overpricing things. It's the speculative buyers that are overpricing things. Those people that think that this is going to be the next, you know, rare baseball cards or comic book set. But best of luck with your sealed Days of Thunder. I got a sealed Winter Games in 2600. I got there.
Yeah, you do.
Hey, Pat Nian. This is Jim from Wisconsin again. There's a lot of guest characters in Mortal Kombat nowadays. I was just wondering your two top picks of characters you would like to see in there. Personally, I would like to see Doom Guy and The Mask from the comic, not the Jim Carrey version. Just wondering your thoughts on that. Okay.
So when did Mortal Kombat become like the Smash Brothers, but for like adult properties? It must have happened the past few years where they're adding more. They got Stallone in there now, voicing Rambo.
It started with the DLC stuff that
Freddy Krueger and Jason
in 9, and then 10 took it further. And then
RoboCop's in there, I think.
Yeah, Robert Cop.
Isn't the Xenomorph in there?
Xenomorph, Predator.
Yeah.
Can't remember if those are all in 11 or that might have been spread between 10 and 11. But yeah, they get a lot of interesting
ones. They got Stallone.
They
got Arnold doing Terminator.
I want to see Bolo Young in there as Chong Li.
Okay. Not Van Damme. You just want to get...
I want Bolo.
Isn't it a shock how they never got Van Damme in one of these games when he was inspiration for Johnny and almost was Johnny Cage?
Street Fighter, the movie.
No, but you never got him in a Mortal Kombat. Like, yeah. You think that they'd put him in at some point.
That'd be nice.
You owe royalties. The OM royalties are midway to our man there. I'll do a few more here.
Patrick, what? Ian, Ryan from Saginaw here. I'm trying to get into the great game of golf, and that got me thinking. What's the best golf game you've ever played, and why is it Neo Turf Masters?
Oh, it's so hard.
Thank you.
I keep hearing about this game. I got to play it at some point. I like golf games.
You never played Neo Turf Masters? No. Okay, Neo Turf Masters.
That's not one I play in the arcade. I wouldn't fire that one up for my quarter.
Neo Turf Masters in the arcade is amazing. And the Neo Turf Masters on the Pocket system is actually really, really fucking good too. Neo Turf Masters is legitimately at the top of my list for favorite golf games. But I also have to shout out the Hot Shots Golf series. I've always loved.
Oh, I heard that's good.
Particularly 4 and the one that they put on the Vita, World Invitational. I played the shit out of it. The one on the PS4, actually, I should play a little bit more of. I didn't play as much as I should have. With Mario Golf coming out this month, I might have missed my opportunity on that. But
how dare you?
As much as I like the Mario Golf games as well, the Game Boy Advance and Game Boy Color ones are good. I do think I would say Neo Turf Masters and pick your favorite Hot Shots, but I really like the Hot Shots series.
Lee Trevino's Fighting Golf. No. But I try to think of my favorite golf game. I remember I played one of the earlier EA ones in the mid 90s on the PC, and it was really fun and good. I remember getting it down so well.
One of the old Lynx games, maybe, or something like that.
Whatever EA was doing, like 95.
I think that would have been they did the PGA World Tour stuff.
But I remember having a blast playing that. And yeah. I was so good in the timing at that point on the computer using a mouse click.
And the graphics were, I always liked those games because the graphics were kind of nice too.
Well, they were like, obviously not, you're talking like mid 90s. They were like still sprite based, but like 3D. It was like an earlier 3D.
I always liked looking at them. Yeah, it was cool.
You had to fly over and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hey guys, Alan from California again. Two questions. Hope it won't take too long. But I've been rewatching the video game years, and one of my favorite segments is Ian's top pinball machines of each year. So that led me to wonder, what are your top 5 pins? And my second question, hope it's not too personal, what brought you guys out to California? Thanks.
Well, I think we answered that before. I wanted a fresh start in San Diego, and I wanted to do writing, screenwriting in particular, be closer to L.A. Obviously, I never became a screenwriter, but I wrote a lot of stuff while I've been out here, and that's why I came out here.
I just needed a change of pace, and the lady that I was dating at the time had moved out here, and I said, well, I mean, I went months later. She had been out here for a couple of years, but we got into a relationship through her visiting home, and it just seemed like a good... I needed that spark, that catalyst. It wasn't like...
Yeah, you need a spark.
You know, even at that age, it wasn't like I wasn't chasing this lady because I thought she was going to be who I was with forever. But I was like, I enjoy where we were at the time. And I was like, fuck it. Let's just go. At some point you got to stop planning and you just have to say, I'm doing it and get up and do it. Yeah. And it's terrifying, especially with a big move like that, but you got to do it. So
yeah, it's, wasn't a fun time. A lot of moving parts, especially with the job I had at the time and packing up the fucking game collection.
And moving cross-country sucks for a lot of reasons, but I mean, it's worth it in the end.
I mean, God, they lost one box of mine, an important box to movers, and they were like these shifty fucking Hoboken moving company, but they were like $1,000 less than the other moving company, like the professional ones you see on like commercials. Then they lost one box. I was like, and they only broke like one thing. I was like, oh, that's good for the amount of shit I had. They didn't break any game stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but they did lose that Nintendo Power Tips cassette. We're getting off topic though, and my plush Donkey Kong that I had from when I was a kid.
What are your top 5 favorite pinball machines, Pat?
Medieval Madness is up there. Dr. Dude. God, top pinball machines. Pinball machines. I just name some, and I'll say if I like them or not.
Just go off. That's no fun.
I don't know. I'm not in a good mood right now. So I don't know. Baywatch, my guilty pleasure arcade game. Dirty Harry's fun.
Baywatch has got a ton of ramps.
It's just fun.
Yeah.
Dirty Harry's really fun from I remember, and the 93 or 92 Star Wars, the original Star Wars arcade was fantastic to me. Oh, Indiana Jones, the original Indiana Jones. Oh, you don't have any top 5. Okay.
I do, but he asked you.
He asked me.
I think the whole point was that people know what I like in terms of pinball because of that segment, but they don't know what you like.
Oh, okay.
One more.
Hey, Pat,
one more.
Ian, Jonathan from Denver again. Happy birthday, Pat. You talked about your birthday, started bringing up Ginzon stories as a fellow Italian kid who married a woman from Brooklyn.
Nice.
And got the whole Brooklyn family with it. Out here in Colorado, we always got called Dagos. The Ginzon thing was lost on us. So I'll say, hey, bring up your best Dago stories. Let's hear about growing up Italian. I love that stuff because it reminds me of getting slapped in the back of the head by union steel worker hands. My grandfather. You know how it is. Yeah, keep us aware.
Wait
a
minute.
Thanks.
So wait, he's trying to – what are my favorite ethnic slur stories? Is that what he's trying to
What are your favorite stories about being an Italian as a child?
Well, I the Christmases are great. Going to – hanging out with my grandfather's, you know, buddies at – yeah, they had like the, you know, the Elks Club sort of man club slash pool place, I guess, one of those giant places, and being around those guys and – they're not. He never played bocce. My grandfather, it was just horseshoes.
I love bocce.
Bocce's fun though. Bocce. If I want to be an old Italian man, I want to.
I love
play
all
bocce.
Those lawn games: bocce, horseshoes, cornshaw, cornhole,
cornshaw,
cornshaw.
Well, that's something else. I actually looked up ethnic slurs because I wanted to know where Dago came from, and Dago's actually one of the nicer ethnic slurs on the list. It's actually one of those. Okay, that one's not horrible compared to some of the other ones on there. Never was called an ethnic slur. I was called the N-word as a kid, a couple of summers. That was not fun, especially because, I used to tan really darkly. I mean, like, I really tan when I was out in the summer. Like, it was really tan. So I was called that. That was not fun. I cried the one time. Especially with a bunch of kids I didn't know, too. That was weird. That's really about it. Here's the big Italian thing. When you have the Italian grandparents, you went over for supper. Supper, Ian. When you eat supper. That early, awesome afternoon dinner on Sunday. You go over Sunday.
Like 3, 4?
Yeah, like 2:30, 3. You show up at 2. You chat for a little bit. You sit down at 3. You have your courses. It's a fantastic concept. You get it out of the way early, you know. And we go over for supper for, you know, Sunday gravy. That's what you call it, yeah, as in, you know, East Coast Italian. And that was the biggest memory. Seeing my grandma always had the Andes mint candies in the little bowl. You know, Patrick, you can have one. You get the little crystal bowl. And I go down to my, you know, not really an Italian thing. My father had a workshop down in the basement, and that's the biggest memory is going over the grandparents. Like, you went over like twice a month. It was like so regular. We drive down there on Sunday. Then we visit the other grandparents. We're only like 4 blocks away. They're in the same town, so it was like you saw both pairs. So that was interesting. All right, a couple more here. We didn't do that long of a podcast this time, but that's good for Pat's psyche sometimes.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Jordan from Seattle, Washington. My question for you is, what popular movie or TV franchise were you surprised that never made an appearance on the original Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, whatever, either 8 or 16-bit console? My example is Highlander. I'm surprised that it never made it onto the NES in the 80s. Any thoughts?
Well, it should have made it on the Super Nintendo. That's what's so shocking. And I brought this up before. I think I mentioned it in a certain Super Nintendo guidebook. How the hell did we get a Time Tracks game and not a Highlander, the series game? I don't understand that. Time Tracks was on for 2 seasons. Highlander the series was on for 6. It was a much more popular show in terms of syndication. You know, like, you had the big 3 was Lorenzo Lamas and Renegade, Time Tracks, and Highlander, like the 3 action syndicated shows that came out in the early 90s. And to this day, you're cutting people's heads off in Highlander, but come on. Like, let's get over that part. I'm shocked there wasn't a Highlander game outside of the shitty Jaguar cartoon CD game. I'm shocked that didn't happen.
I was always surprised that there wasn't A-Team game on the Nintendo.
A little bit past its prime, though.
Yeah, well, that's my true answer, but I looked it up. A-Team was 83 to 87, so it would have been past the prime. But I'm still surprised. It was very popular when it was around.
Yeah, especially since we had a Knight Rider game that was dead by the late 80s.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Maybe it was because it was too violent, even though people weren't getting killed with machine guns.
People were getting shot all the time. Shot at. No one ever got shot.
People got shot in G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
I'm not making this up. Than in A-Team.
No, I know.
That's what's so weird about that. The big one, He-Man probably should have been one. It was they had the movie come out in like 89. It was past its prime by that point. Same sort of lifespan as
Thundercats, Voltron, all of those. I'm honestly very surprised.
Voltron a little past the prime, but yeah, definitely, He-Man was the biggest, and Transformers was still fairly big by 87 at the movie. Like, you could have done that. G.I. Joe. I think.
And the thing is, though, about that time period is that they would have been past their prime, but they were still incredibly popular with kids. I mean,
you saw toys.
The 80s, well, that's what I'm getting at. There were still toys.
Still syndicated cartoons.
Hand-me-downs were huge then. Like, they were, even though they, and that's something that I always think about is, a lot of the things that I think about weren't actually active when I knew them, but they were still well-known. Like, He-Man.
He-Man should have been.
They were in the public consciousness for far longer than what the runtime suggests.
Yes, He-Man had another cartoon series come out, and they had a live-action movie.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that there wasn't a He-Man even on the Super Nintendo, like, it's bizarre. Like, it's bizarre. That'd be a home run. You know, okay, we'll do one more here.
Well, hey there, Ian and Pat. I just wanted to know, do you guys cook with charcoal or propane? I hope you say propane, but no bad blood if you say charcoal, or if you grill at all, and if you prefer any other flavor over the other. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Hank. No, I have not cooked with propane. I hear it's clean. It's clean. That's the good thing about propane.
That made me happy.
Good for the environment. No propane for you, Ian?
I love King of the Hill. It is propane at our apartment complex. We have a communal grill. And
a communal grill? There's okay. A communal grill. Like the ones you see at the park that were disgusting? You had to, like, scrape off?
No, it's a gas grill, and there's a line that runs from, like, the wall. So there's a legit gas hookup directly to it. There's no, like, replacement of canisters. And people are pretty good about sharing it.
They're negotiating a King of the Hill revival.
Mm.
I think you can get some mileage out of that.
I think modern
things
day
are
King
fucking
of the Hill
weird
be,
enough
yeah.
that you can mine a lot of topics. You know, see how some characters evolved in the
That's
past.
What I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go home. I'm gonna take a nap. I'm gonna watch some King of the Hill tonight.
Is it on Hulu? What is it on?
It's on Hulu. Yeah.
Hulu. All right. I think I stole someone's Hulu. I think I got that ready to go there. King of the Hill was brilliant. Very sensible. Very very character oriented comedy.
Real people.
Real people, not Family Guy fucking bullshit.
Real fucking people. That's what I liked about King of the Hill, is that everyone seemed very real.
Yeah, they're real characters. The mom's hysterical. She taught Spanish, but it had, like, you know, she had no accent or dialect at all. She did it like, you know, like white bread Spanish. I love that sort of stuff.
Who doesn't love Bobby?
I can't do the voice. I used to be able to, probably. Yeah, I think I'd be into a revival. I think that'd be... You got to keep the characters the same age, though. Don't age them up too much.
No.
Come on.
No, I don't.
The show was on for like 10 years.
I don't want Teenage Bobby.
It was on for like 10 years. You never heard about it, really, because they didn't have like the pop culture stuff. And they didn't have the toys and stuff.
I loved it even when it was on, but it was one of those shows that I feel like really started to get recognized in its last couple seasons, and it got popular after the fact.
They realized, oh, man, this was really
good. This was good, and we missed
it. We should have paid it. Same thing with like Futurama. At least they brought Futurama back for... the handful of last season, whatever they did. They gave it
they
a proper
did a couple of seasons.
I think those...
They
did the movie stuff. They did a mini season.
They did... So, Futurama had two issues. It got canceled, then repicked up by Cartoon Network, finished into, I think, four seasons, and then they... No, am I... Whatever. Moving on.
They finished it off properly, though.
Yes.
Which is good to see that. So, all right, that's it for the CU podcast.
Bah.
This was a fun one, right?
It was. It was good.
I got my loss of money out of the way, that energy out of the way early.
Yeah, work it out of your system.
Well, I got to call them and figure out what the hell's happened with Canadian shipping. What's going on up there, Canada? What's happening there? Did you shut down the roads? Like how did the cost triple? Like, what's happening right now? I don't know.
That's weird.
It's bizarre.
No good.
No good for Pat to lose that money. No good. No bueno. No bueno. All right, well, that's it, and we'll see you later. Go try some Raid Shadow Legends. Maybe you'll get addicted.